our emissions increased up until that point. So we've conveniently picked the highest year of emissions from which to say we're decreasing from. Before that, we actually increased our emissions quite a lot.
And we set our baseline pretty high, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Australia's got a record of cherry-picking baselines to make it seem like it's, you know, to basically meet and beat. It's easy to meet and beat if you go...
Set a low time.
If you're like a professional athlete and you go play in the Children's League, you're going to kill it.
Yeah.
And that's basically what Australia's done.
One for mum, one for dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasurer.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and today we're going to be talking about the other global crisis, climate change, and the most recent IPCC report that was just put out this week.
Breaking news, the latest international scientific assessment on climate change landed just a few minutes ago.
Code red for humanity. That's how the UN Secretary General described the report.
The Earth's climate is getting so hot that in about a decade, temperatures will likely exceed the...
or exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius in the next 20 years. Now, that is 10 years sooner than expected.
The report predicts more intense storms across our north, but longer and more intense heat waves.
And it is fueling the extreme weather that we're seeing, fires, floods, droughts and cyclones.
The world listened, but didn't hear. The world listened, but it didn't act strongly enough. And as a result, climate change is a problem that is here now. Nobody's safe, and it's getting worse faster.
And I'm joined by the team from our Climate and Energy Program, Director Richie Merzian and graduate researcher Alia Armistead, about the key findings and what the implications are for Australia. G'day, Richie. Hey, Alia.
Morning, Em.
Morning.
So, Richie, for those of us who haven't read the report, what is an IPCC report and who is the IPCC?
It's a good place to start. So the IPCC pretty much represents the global consensus when it comes to climate change research. So they were set up in 1988 in partnership with the World Meteorological Organization and the UN Environment Program. So they're endorsed by the UN. They make up hundreds of scientists that review thousands of peer-reviewed research and then produce reports on the state of our climate, which the summary of which is approved by every government in the world. So you couldn't get a more ambitious authority when it comes to what's actually happening on climate change. And just this week, they released their sixth iteration. This has been going on for over 30 years, but their sixth iteration and quite a stark reminder for where we're at in terms of climate.
Yeah. So, Alia, the most recent report, as Richie said, the sixth report was released this week. What are some of the key findings that people should know about?
Well, it's not great news, unfortunately, but it's something that we've all been waiting to hear. And that's that the 1.5 degree warming limit that most countries have been trying to strive towards for 5 or 6 years now is basically locked in. And we will probably hit that target sometime in the next 20 years. That's not to say that runaway climate change is a done deal. We can still definitely bend the warming trajectory, but we will hit that first target in the next 20 years. And then really it's up to us now to try and change the trajectory after that. So we can still hold it to that limit if we try our darn hardest. But after that, if we continue on our current trajectory, we will see some serious climate impacts.
Yeah. And so what did the report have to say, Richie, about what some of those climate impacts that we can expect on this trajectory?
Right. Are you ready for it, Ebony? We are expecting more floods, more extreme storms, more extreme heat, and these things happening more frequently as well. More sea level rise is locked in. A lot of these things are in train regardless of how ambitious we are right now. But as Alia said, there's a certain point where we can start curbing things around in the next 10 to 20 years, because of how, you know, greenhouse gas emissions work, there's just a lot that's already in train. But the other thing that was really interesting is that they highlighted that if we want a bigger impact, we can address methane, a far more high-impact greenhouse gas, but also short-lived. Methane is pretty much natural gas. So then you have to really ask whether Australia should be pursuing a gas-fired recovery.
Indeed, something we have been questioning here for a long time now. But essentially, when you're talking about that 1.5 trajectory being where we're headed quite soon, and Richie, you're saying that's kind of baked in, that's because all of these greenhouse gases, all this pollution, it's cumulative. It's just stuck up there in the atmosphere and it hangs around for quite a while once it's up there.
Yeah, that's right, Eb. And the other thing that the report showed was that we have the strongest language we've had from climate scientists to date. So the language that they use is that it's unequivocal that we as humans are causing climate change and that we're really seeing those impacts already. So globally, we've actually already warmed by about 1.1 degrees. The statistics are even higher for in Australia because of the nature of our landmass. So we're at about 1.4 degrees in Australia already. And we've already seen some sea level rise, and it shows that we are definitely causing those things and that we will continue to cause these impacts if we don't change our behaviours.
So no one should be in any doubt after this report. It's human-induced climate change, and Australia is kind of at the sharp end of it, Richie.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Australia is a top 10% emitter. We're the third largest supplier of fossil fuels. Australia is a major contributor to greenhouse gas emissions through the fossil fuels that we dig up and that we burn here, and therefore it has a key role to play in addressing this.
Why is the Prime Minister leaving Australia behind by refusing to support net zero by 2050?
Prime Minister, your 2030 targets are a death sentence for our country. Will you heed this warning?
We continued to meet and beat the commitments that we have had.
Members on both sides.
Meeting and beating.
Of emissions, we're on track to meet and beat our 2030 target.
Right now, 20% reduction in emissions since 2005.
Yeah, so Richie, quite often we hear the Prime Minister and the Energy Minister talk about Australia meeting and beating our targets, but what does Australia Institute research show is actually happening to Australia's emissions?
So Australia's emissions right now have been going up for the last couple of years, and recently they're
not down.
Well, they've been going up for the last couple of years, and then recently they've plateaued and started to decrease.
Yep.
And that's not really a result of federal government policy. That's a result of changes in how we use our land, not changes in how we actually get our energy, which still remains highly reliant on fossil fuels. So the Prime Minister says that we've reduced our emissions 20% since 2005. Almost the entirety of that is land use changes, is the impact of the drought, or is the impact of the pandemic, all things really outside our control. When we look at the energy sector, that's the majority of our emissions from transport and electricity and industry and heating. Those emissions have gone up, and that's the real problem. Our economy has become more carbon intensive, not less.
That seems pretty dire.
It also conveniently leaves out the point that our emissions increased up until that point. So we've conveniently picked the highest year of emissions from which to say we're decreasing from. Before that, we actually increased our emissions quite a lot.
And we set our baseline pretty high, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah, so Australia's got a record of cherry-picking baselines to make it seem like it's, you know, to basically meet and beat. It's easy to meet and beat if you go
set a low target. Yeah,
that's right. If you're like a professional athlete and you go play in the children's league, you're going to kill it.
Yeah.
And that's basically what Australia's done.
Right.
You know, these steps will set America on a path of net zero emissions.
I have to ask myself, you know, has Prime Minister Morrison read the IPCC report? Because it is important that every country steps up ambitiously now. And in particular, Australia is out of sync with other Western industrialized countries.
I think everybody in the international community would laugh if they would hear that Australia thinks they're doing enough.
Alia, I noticed today the deputy to the US presidential climate envoy, Dr. Jonathan Pershing, is out there criticising Australia's emissions reduction targets as basically insufficient, which we all know. But how do Australia's targets compare to other countries?
Yeah, that's right, Eb. So we've been called out yet again on the international stage, and this is ahead of the Climate Action Network's Better Future Forum. that Australia is basically not doing enough. And it's something that we all know and countries around the world know. And it's really clear when you compare our emissions reduction target to other countries. So this year is like a milestone for resubmitting targets and increasing the ambition of climate targets. And as a result, many countries, including the US and Canada and the EU, have all increased their targets. Some, like the US, have doubled their targets. So they have a 50% reduction emissions reduction target, which basically it means they're halving their emissions in 2030.
Yeah.
And that's twice as strong as ours. So our reduction target is 26 to 28%. And instead of increasing our target, we've kept it the same.
Yeah, so not very ambitious at all. Richie, about 50 environment groups took out a full-page ad in several papers today, really calling for the government to implement much more dramatic reductions in pollution this decade. But the federal government seems to be having an internal fight about 2050 targets.
Well, the National Party still opposes any stronger greenhouse emissions cut, despite the UN report warning that a human-driven climate crisis is already underway.
I'm quite happy to consider the menu when you tell me what's on it and what it costs. Show us the plan, show us the cost, we're happy to consider.
Where is it? Are you working on it?
No, hang on. We don't actually come up with a plan. The CSIRO, other competent people come up with a plan.
Oh, come on. The government has to be...
I mean, where does that leave us? How important is the next 10 years?
The next 10 years are what President Biden says is the decisive decade. Much like we were talking about how there's a locked-in amount of greenhouse gases, it means that you have to take immediate action and make that count. And so upping that initial short-term target is probably more important than locking in a target 30 years away, especially if there's very little accountability for how you get there. And so if Australia's target is weak, which it is, 26% emissions reductions in the next 10 years, then this is the time that we should at least double, if not triple it. That would see us change how we get our energy, change how we get our transport, change how we undertake our industry, and certainly turn things around when it comes to investing in more fossil fuel production, when really we should be investing in building industries of the future.
Yeah. So, Richie, just sticking with you on this one, I mean, Australia's supposed to be having a so-called gas-fired recovery. Not that I see any evidence of that anywhere, but the government is certainly shoving billions of dollars out the door, or at least hundreds of millions of dollars out the door in terms of fossil fuel subsidies. Are we just headed in actually the totally wrong direction?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing. The government's decided that its approach is technology, not taxes, which means it's cherry-picked a few technologies that seem to work very well for the fossil fuel industry, like carbon capture and storage, which has had 20 years of failing and has somehow failed upwards in that it's earning more money and more attention, or the new industry of hydrogen, which you can create by either going zero emissions using water and renewable energy, or you can make it in a rather dirty way using fossil fuels. The government's ambivalent about which direction it's going to take, so it seems like we're just going to go down a path of more fossil fuel tech rather than actually doing things we know work.
And Alia, the Tomago smelter, and I hope I've said Tomago correctly there, they are one of the biggest energy users and electricity users in Australia, and they kind of made a big announcement this week that really shows the business sector is way ahead of the government on this. What did they say?
Yeah, exactly. They said that they hope to run their operations off renewable energy within the next decade, which is really a landmark change from our manufacturing and really emissions intensive industries. So if industries like that can shift their production to renewable energy, there really is no reason why our government should still be banking on fossil fuels and gas-fired recovery.
Yeah, so that seems to me like a pretty big announcement, Richie, and I guess really does show that shift and that business is just way ahead of where the government is, but presumably it's also a competitive advantage if Australia can shift.
It certainly would be. I mean, aluminium smelters are some of the largest electricity users. Really, if you think about it, it's like congealed electricity, how much goes into it, and that's, I think Tomago being the largest, is the largest electricity user in the country.
Yeah.
So having them switch to renewables is a major win, but also it will ensure that we're competitive, because if we think back to the EU's carbon border adjustment mechanism,
yep,
they're going to be taxing aluminium that comes into the EU that is high in carbon intensity. That would be aluminium made using coal-fired powered electricity like we currently have in New South Wales. If they shift to clean energy, that's just going to make them more competitive in all the markets that will tax carbon at the border. And this makes sense. I think Tomago is partly owned by Rio Tinto, and Rio knows this. That's why it's invested in clean aluminium elsewhere. And finally, it looks like they might be doing the same here.
I mean, any news on climate change is nearly always depressing. And certainly I think this IPCC report, you know, it's fairly confronting, some of the findings that are in it. But what reasons are there for people to hope? I mean, we've just talked about Tomago, but like, what are the other reasons that we can see that we are actually able to get ourselves out of this mess that we've put ourselves in?
I mean, that's one of the takeaway messages from this report, is that it is not too late. Yes, the situation is dire, but we can still turn this around if we really want to. And I think what is more concerning than the report is our government's response to the report. So if we can change that, then we do have a real change, a real possibility of changing our future climate change trajectory.
What do you know that they don't?
Well, David, I think it's best just to quote some of their own words. So one of the IPCC authors was quoted a few months ago saying that he hoped this report would scare people, and that it would scare people enough so that it would help change their vote.
Probably does scare people, some of these projections and findings.
I mean, why would a scientist want to change people's vote?
I agree with Alia. The report wasn't as depressing as how the government responded. And in that sense...
unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. But maybe that's because we work on climate change every day. But that also means that as Australians, we have that within our capabilities to change. In fact, we're far more likely to change how the Australian government operates on climate change than we are the broader climate direction. And that's within our purview. And within the next 12 months, we'll have an election and hopefully we'll see a lot more action on climate change discussed, if not put forward by political parties.
Australia is part of the solution. Our emissions have fallen by 20% since 2005.
We're seeing extraordinary changes in farming practices, in the deployment of soil testing technologies by farmers across this country, bringing down emissions, whereby we met and beat our Kyoto targets, our 2020 targets, 459 million tonnes.
But that's just dodgy accounting. You take out the land sector, for which we really have no control over at the national level, especially when it comes to climate policy. You look at the sectors that do matter, the sectors that drive our economy, and it's a very different picture.
So, Richie, sticking with land use, are we the only country that kind of calculates our emissions in that way? How do other countries treat land use and how are their emissions tracking compared to ours?
Australia's unique in that it is so heavily reliant on land use changes in order to meet its climate targets. A number of other countries like Norway say that's too easy. We actually want to decarbonise, and that's where they focus their attention. And we released a report by Professor Hugh Sadler this week that shows that Australia is actually at the back of the OECD when it comes to that energy transition. According to any metric that we've looked at, energy efficiency or emissions per capita or electrification rates or energy productivity, we are actually either we have stayed towards the back of the pack in the last 15 years or slipped even further. And so there's a really big opportunity for us to switch our energy sector, but we're not taking that opportunity up right now.
Okay, so basically land use and changing land use, Australia's just stopped land clearing. And we like to include that because it's kind of easy emissions reductions, but other countries are looking basically at their energy sector, their electricity sector, other sectors of the economy and focusing on that. And Australia just, if we look at those sectors, we're just at the back of the pack compared to other countries.
That's exactly right. Our energy sector, so that's electricity, that's transport, that's heating, that's all become more carbon intensive, not less. And what we need to be doing is like the US, where they're going to go 100% clean electricity by 2035, or the UK, where they're going to go 100% new car sales electric by 2030. Those are the kind of policies we need to look at if we want to take this research seriously.
And are we looking at any of those things?
Not at the federal level. But we're seeing some progress at the state level with renewable energy zones, with incentives for electric vehicles, with some are starting to do EV sales targets as well.
So, Alia, a bit more hopeful if we look at the state government level.
Yeah, that's right. And the federal government knows that and doesn't really like it that much. But some states are doing much, much better. And our federal government really should take a leaf out of their book, I think.
Yeah, and I guess it's the states that have set all those net zero by 2050 targets as well. Thanks, Richie and Alia. That's all we've got time for today. This episode was recorded on Thursday, the 12th of August, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit australiainstitute.org.au for all our latest research, including all the latest papers from our climate and energy program. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Richie Merzian is at Richie Merzian, and Alia Armistead is at Alia Armistead. Our producer, Jennifer Macy, is at Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Stay safe out there, and thanks for listening.